Then let's. Okay. So this evening we are continuing with our little series on chapters from Idiot's Guide to Zen Living, which I wrote. And tonight we are continuing with the chapter 18, Dealing with Challenges Zen Style. And seems like this could be a little louder. And tonight we are doing afflictive emotions. And if we spend the whole evening on afflictive emotions, that's fine. But then if we find to have some time, we can go on to betrayal. dealing with challenges Zen style. So fun. Let's see. And there's also being misunderstood or criticized in the chapter, but generally, it's good to turn up the volume on the receiver, the little box on top of the speaker. There's a little, you can hardly see it. It's hidden out there on top of the speaker. And that's the best place to control the volume. Is there no place to control the volume on there?
There's not, but can you hear all right? Are we good?
Is it? Yeah. No, it seems a little louder. That's great.
This is a little better now, I think.
You were unplugged. There was no power in this thing. You told me to turn it up. It was off.
Huh.
And now it's on.
That helps.
Huh?
It's chapter 18, Dealing with Challenges Zen Style. And it's divided into sections. Tonight, we are starting with afflictive emotions. So just to review, because we did some challenges last week, there's kind of three steps if we want to practice with this stuff. The first being, no matter what is happening, reminding ourselves we have choice in the matter. So no matter what's happening, no matter how caught up we are, this momentary, like, right, I can practice with this. Not necessarily that I can control my mind and emotions and I can make it all go away or anything like that, but we have some choices. And the second step is to see clearly, to really kind of stop and see what's going on. And our zazen and our mindfulness and the self-study we do in our practice helps us do that. And then the third step being letting go of attachment to that which is causing suffering. So if we get an insight into something that we can, some way we can change our mind or our attitude or our behavior or something to relieve some of the suffering of the situation, we have to do it. You know, the insight's not enough. We actually have to take action on that. So that's the basic approach when we are taking a challenge and we want to practice with it, which I think is, to me, that's a big part of the joy of practice. When I encountered Zen at the what seems now like a very sweet age of 24, I already felt really neurotic, like I couldn't really change. Like I had dysfunctional ways I acted and thought. And somebody could tell me, oh, it's not worth worrying, or you shouldn't do that. But that I couldn't stop. But the idea of getting into practice then and saying, like, you know, how are you practicing with that? Was and finding that you could make some kind of change. Maybe not, you know, like drastic overnight, everything's wonderful, but some kind of change was very, very encouraging. So in terms of afflictive emotions, what are they? And I just remembered that I meant we're going to do a little bit of kind of my shared screen brainstorming, the hybrid way of, you know, getting a blackboard or a whiteboard. And pull those up. Use them in a moment. Okay. So in terms of afflictive emotions, we're going to kind of brainstorm on that a little bit together. But no one is saying emotions are bad. Like, we're not saying all emotions are afflictive. All emotions are bad. Afflictive, if you look up the definition, it's characterized by or causing pain, distress, or grief. Synonyms being aching, agonizing, excruciating, hurtful, sore, stinging. In addition, from the Buddhist point of view, afflictive emotions are self-perpetuating and strangely intoxicating. They kind of trap you, and they're compelling. They're like telling you, you must do something. Something is wrong. So, you know, we're talking about anger, hatred, fear, jealousy, paranoia, those kinds of feelings which just tear you up inside. And we want to differentiate between a natural response in the moment, which may be giving us important information, right? Anger, fear, doubt may arise in the moment. And at least, you know, what we can say is, part of me thinks something needs to be protected. Part of me thinks something wrong is going on here. So there may be a very natural response in the moment, a pure response, if you will. But that is valuable for maybe about 30 seconds. Or maybe if the thing is continuing, maybe it goes on for longer, but it has to have real input, right? It's not just what we tend to do is take these emotions, and then further down the line is where they become afflictive. So we can brainstorm on how that process works. And we're also differentiating between afflictive emotions and those that are simply painful, but not in necessarily an afflictive or intoxicating or destructive way. You know, grief is definitely one of these where it's like, I mean, there might be a time when it actually feels quite excruciating and you would like some relief from it temporarily or whatever. But it's not quite the same thing, right? I mean, anybody gets intoxicated with grief. It's something you feel, it's something that you have to endure and process. Disappointment, sadness. So there may be painful feelings that we have to experience and go through and process. And they're not things that we want to continue to, like, when we're really angry or starting to, you know, nurture a resentment against someone or something, then we're like, yeah, or we're fearful and we're doubting and our mind just continues to catastrophize or something like that. So, and no one here is trying to tell you that a given emotion is bad or afflictive, right? So if you're feeling something, maybe you feel anger or you feel something, and I never want to send a message that, like, oh, well, that's an afflictive emotion. You shouldn't be feeling that one. If you're a good Buddhist, you wouldn't indulge that afflictive emotion. You know, it's up to us to know, is it afflictive or not? Sometimes we need to be honest with ourselves. Has it gotten to that point? Or is this just kind of one of those natural things we have to go through? So I figured we just do a little brainstorm and hopefully I have been, yes. Have I been made a co-host? Yes. And I'm going to share. Okay. See as many cloud people as I can at the same time. Take some fussing. All right. So, afflictive emotions. And people are free to kind of just speculate here. Descriptions, definitions, examples.
How many do you want? This is kind of my specialty.
Yeah, just start yelling them out.
Regret.
Ooh.
Self-doubt. Shame.
What was that?
Shame.
Ah.
Hatred. I say contempt.
Suspicion.
Suspicion.
Jealousy or envy?
Oh, jealousy. Envy. I love another one.
Badness.
Do you think it's sadness intoxicating?
It was for me.
Huh?
Rage.
Self-pity.
I don't know about this one, but the decision to punish others by withdrawing from them, what would you say with that?
So I'm just saying the...
A passive-aggressive...
Isolation.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, like the decision to kind of withdraw, punish others with your withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's kind of a doing. So what is the emotion behind it?
I see.
Which would be
all kinds of things.
I know, kind of like resentment, but there is a way that you can become convinced that other people are like out to get you, or they're whatever, and really, or they don't care or something, and kind of like, you know, and suspicion. I mean, paranoia sounds kind of extreme. It's almost like social paranoia in a way, you know, like specifically around relationships.
Talking about withdrawal for like punishment, maybe it's like a desire for revenge.
Uh-huh. Desire for revenge is probably. Yeah. Chokatsu?
A feeling of haughtiness or superiority. I don't know what the emotion is.
Is that, this is saying haughtiness or superiority, but that probably doesn't hurt. I'm like, I'm not picturing that as a feeling you want to get rid of. I mean, it might be one that you should work on, right? But it's not like, oh, darn, I feel superior.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What about rejection? Like, is that one where you like withdraw from you?
I think if you have a sense of rejection, you could be dwelling on a, maybe that's kind of what we're getting at, is you could dwell on a sense of rejection. Shoketsu, you've been trying to break in here.
Yeah, I keep losing it. Indifference. I'm thinking of lack of compassion, but I think indifference is a better.
Well, I think that's another one that it's, I mean, we don't experience it generally as afflictive, do we? Like it's not like, oh man, I feel indifferent. I mean, the afflictive emotions are ones that like they're uncomfortable. They cause us pain.
So the other one, I don't know.
Maybe people's experience of feeling kind of, I mean, I guess that's kind of one of the definitions of depression, right? Is feeling kind of numb and cut off, and it's unpleasant.
I'm talking about feeling from others, from another, like they're indifferent. I don't know.
So perceived indifference from others.
Yeah.
Then the haughtiness would fall in that too. Are we looking at pain to others or pain to self? Right.
Yeah. I mean, these emotions are painful. So I think, Shoketsu, what you're also talking about is that sense of rejection.
Or
a sense of abandonment. Sense of alienation.
Yeah.
Abandonment. And what, how would you describe, like, what makes something go, you know, where along the spectrum to afflictive, you know, like regret? Oh, you made a mistake, you know, maybe you just like, too bad that happened, you know, kind of at what point, what characterizes that change from
perseveration,
like,
you know, maybe something.
Well, I don't think I have ever felt regret and thought in my head, ah, too bad. If I feel regret, I am eaten up with it.
Mm.
I am so eaten up with it, I feel like I'm going to explode. And that's the way I felt about sadness. And perhaps the feeling of sadness for me was a little bit closer to self-pity. But it's one thing to feel sad. It's one thing to feel sorry for yourself. I have always said that nobody can feel as sorry for me as I can. But, you know, sooner or later, that self-pity is just like a bucket overflowing, and it is going to run all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of this feels like when it gets out of our so-called control.
Because you're dwelling on it. You're perseverating. You keep reproducing the feeling.
Reproducing the feeling. Yeah, I mean, it's just, why do we, it's crazy. It's crazy making. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to, I don't so much anymore, but I used to suffer from just irrational jealousy about my intimate relationships, like my one-on-one romantic relationship. I had no basis, but I could just imagine, you know, like the fear of betrayal, like, because that's, you know, one of my primary relationships and joys and things that I depend on, and the sort of the imagining that being shattered by betrayal, it's like brings up this fear. And then you can just imagine all kinds of stuff, right? And then you're insecure and you're asking the person to affirm their trustworthiness when they haven't done anything. And it's, yeah, you could go down that rabbit hole and it can be really ugly.
A contemporary version of that is getting a text message that is not really fleshed out, is a little oblique, and having to decide what they really mean by that.
Interpreting obscure text messages.
Yeah. Loss of perspective.
Loss of perspective, yeah.
When it causes you to have a hard time sleeping or eating or taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How about obsession?
Mm-hmm.
It's intrusive.
And intrusive. Yeah, not just like you're sitting zazen and then, you know, various thoughts are going through your head, but like one thought all over and over and you can't get it out. Yeah.
Gluttony.
Like that's a way that you might cope with it?
Well, you know, like to cope with stress or whatever, you overeat and you eat and you eat and it's negative, but then you could get pretty far down that road, I suppose.
I mean, we're describing things that we can't stop.
Yeah.
Right? Or that just keep repeating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't break the cycle.
So that's a great list there. So what about what do we do to get free? So for one thing, changing our perspective and thinking, I am a person of practice, I have a practice, I'm going to try to and do something about this. Is a big part, because I think there's, I don't know, a lot of folks, I mean, not that they have to be Buddhist, but if, you know, they could have some kind of other practice, but other folks, I think, would just kind of just feel like victims of this, right? You just got to ride it out. Maybe you got to eat too much, or you got to drink, or you got to distract yourself or something. Like you just, like the thought that you could do something about this doesn't, I don't know. And it doesn't seem to occur to a lot of people. So if the thought occurs though, then what do we do? I'm just thinking of folks, you know, if you have examples of where, you know, you have been caught up in this and then turning your mind toward the light, right? What have you done to manage to kind of start breaking out of that cycle?
You seek help, you get therapy, medication, and practice.
Getting out, seek help, support.
My sister puts a hex on people. But you probably
don't want to. Judith said her sister puts a hex on people.
She's not a Buddhist.
Alice.
She makes it work, so.
So I remember back when I used to own my clinics, I would get a lot of these afflictive emotions, specifically resentment, self-doubt, shame. I mean, the gamut of them. And I'd feel extremely sad, like weepy and negative and feeling like the world is like spiraling down to just like the toilet drain. But as soon as I have a patient, I just go into taking care of them. It's like it's their hour. I'm going to focus on their pain and I'm going to focus on their lives and how I can help them.
Mm-hmm.
And almost like pretty much really close to 100% of the time, once I'm done with that patient on that appointment, I'd feel like all that negativity and all that, you know, rage and self-pity and all those negative things would evaporate almost. And I can't explain why or how, but it just seems to just ground me to focus on somebody else's problems rather than mine and helping them. It's the most weirdest phenomenon.
It's a lovely phenomenon. It's a bodhisattva activity, right? I mean, it's that helping others is not, it's not like we'll work on ourselves so we feel better and then we'll help other people. It's like actually helping, and generosity helps us as well.
I feel like it's kind of like getting out of yourself, like stop, mm-hmm. like get out of yourself.
And then what's interesting is, like, you know, when we talk about, you know, okay, so we're going to, from the Zen point of view, right, we're going to practice with this. But, you know, like in the most, we may have tools that help, right? Zazen might help, and coming to Sangha might help, and talking to a teacher might help, or something like that, Sangha members. But that's just like the formal aspects of practice, the identifiable from the outside, or you're doing some Zen things. But the real essence of practice, right, is we carry with us every moment of every day. And the most general way I like to define it is living deliberately. So it's like paying attention and trying to make the choices that will lead to a release of a relief of suffering and greater happiness and wisdom. So really doesn't matter what the course is. If you know that, like, you know, if I go out for a run, it's going to clear my head and it's going to jolt me out of this negative frame of mind, well, then that's practice, right? To make that choice to go ahead. It's like you're taking the medicine, you're taking the elixir that's going to break you out of this negativity. So just that choice is practice.
Something I like to do.
When you come up to the microphone and actually move that chair further over here and have it.
Just right here?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. So something I do is face myself and look at my motivation and what's going on within me. And a lot of times I'll have to call someone who will help me look at that and maybe not co-sign.
Not co-sign, yeah.
Right, like not help me justify why I'm the victim or why I'm upset, but actually look at my part and how I can maybe be free to that and move forward.
And what wonderful, wonderful friends those are that we can rely on to talk to like that, who aren't, they aren't going to be judgmental about the fact that we're feeling low or doubtful or angry or anything like that. But yeah, there's, I think the sense of, well, I don't know what general people's sense of friendship is, but one sense is like, I'm going to take your side, you know? Yeah, right. What an asshole. Oh my God. You know?
I usually feel worse when that happens.
Yeah. I mean, because then you're like, you've revved it up, but now you're.
Yeah. I'm like more unconscious and like.
Now you're just even more stuck on it.
Yeah.
Thank you. If anybody in the cloud wants to say anything, hit your reactions button and raise hand, because I can't see, I don't think I can see every Zoom person, so I can't see your raised hand. Or just unmute yourself and say something.
Well, for me, I can't figure out how to raise my hand, sorry. Oh, there it is. For me, one of the best ways I've learned, honestly, is taking a shower, making myself get up and take a shower. Even if I get back into bed or if I can't deal with it or whatever else, just taking a shower seems to like do something and help me to kind of make it through. It helps me to, as Alice said, get out of myself.
Yeah. I mean, to go ahead and do something that you know is going to give you a different, slightly different perspective to take you out of that. You know, what it really means is like letting go momentarily, right, of what seems so real and compelling and true. And so like, it's like the small self is like, no, no, you can't, no, you got to keep dwelling on this. This is an emergency here. And when you go, I think we'll take a shower first. And like, and for me that, I've told this story before, but I don't get angry at people. I get angry at stuff and situations, but I don't get angry at people. But I was really angry this one time. I was furious at my Dharma brother. I thought he had done something like just, it's like sacrilege. It was just like, it was arrogant. It was just terrible. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe he was doing this. And like, it was, I discovered a way he had been doing something for many, many months. I mean, it wasn't like an actual emergency, but I was so mad. And I was just like fuming. And I was visiting a group and we were sitting meditation and we're supposed to like, then afterwards, I think he was going to give a talk or something. And then I was going to have to chat with these people. And I'm like, I gotta go cool off or think about this, right? Because otherwise I'm going to just like lay it out on these people. And I went for a walk, you know? And then as people are talking about this experience of like, you know, after a few blocks, it was like, all right, you know, this has been going on for months. It's not actually an emergency. Huh. Like, I guess I could deal with this tomorrow. And then it was like, for me, it felt like a really great example of no self. This was exactly it, right? The small self is just utterly identified. So this is what in our precept on anger, we say, do not contrive reality for the self. And that's, you know, that's what I was doing. And if I say, I mean, who am I? What am I? What does any of this stuff in my head mean? If I can just go, let go of anger. But it's a wonderful thing to discover that that's possible. Zenko.
Something I started saying to myself, you know, if I feel like I've kind of either gotten like a late start to the day or or the day's kind of gone off track, I think I just said it to myself once and then I was like, oh, I'm going to keep this, which is, it's never too late to have a good day. You know, and which was, you know, just let it go. Maybe we'll try again. You know, it just start now, you know, why don't we just start now and kind of get back on track. So that was something I like.
Yeah, there is something about over the course of practice. You know, I don't know if anyone's experienced this of like, you know, you get angry or you get resentful or something like that. And somebody says, you know, aren't you a Buddhist? I thought you were doing some Zen practice. Why are you still swearing at somebody in traffic? No. And it's like, over the years of practice, though, I mean, some of those things might lessen and disappear. But I'm finding, you know, they may arise, but they don't stick around as long, right? There's not a resonance like, you know, you get upset and then you're upset for the rest of the day. Then you're upset about being upset and it just has to continue. And it's like, I mean, I'm ashamed of how I sometimes have little rages that generally nobody witnesses. But, you know, I'm upset about something, I throw something, I slam a door, whatever. I perhaps swear and I parrot imitate me. But I'm not, you know, I'm ashamed of that. But now, you know, that happens. And then I go, oops. No point, you know, start over. Might as well have a good day now. I had one of those little rages. Now I'm proud of it. And now we're moving on. Cassie.
Oh, yeah, I have a lot. And, you know, sometimes they work. Different interventions work at different points in my life or for different things. And sometimes they're garbage and I have to like up the ante, right? But I can tell you recently, I know you've mentioned her before, but I really like Tara Brock's voice. And sometimes I have to be like, talk me down, Tara, because she has a bunch of guided meditations. And they do work a lot for me because there's something about listening to her voice and paying attention to her voice rather than the voice in my head that keeps, you know, going and going on a feedback loop that helps me a lot. She also spends a lot of time on the feeling in your body, right? Which I feel is really helpful because, you know, if I could think my problems away a lot of times, I would already done it, right? It wasn't for lack of trying. So I really like that. I always have to go to Ms. Tara. Or what I've been doing a lot lately, and I know she's really big on loving kindness or metta, but sometimes it's really hard for me if I'm feeling resentful or angry towards another human, which or feeling some sort of way about a thing, right? For some, you know, you're like gritting your teeth when you're looking, you're thinking of the other person, you know, wishing them happy. It's just like not working a lot of times. But what I've been, you know, it's just, I know it does kind of work, but it's not getting you there, or at least not me. I've been using a lot of, like I visualize, okay, so if the other person was happy and in a good mental place, they wouldn't bother me. Like they would be really nice and kind. So like, okay, so I visualized that person, like, what was that? What would make that person really happy? So I kind of like use my imagination and it always makes me laugh to like, you know, kind of set the stage for them to be happy. And I found that to be really helpful. Like it puts me in such a better place. And I know it's all my imagination, but that seems to have helped me along with the loving kindness or the metta to kind of take it to a next level. Cause maybe I'm just more of a visual person, but yeah, that's what's been helpful for me lately.
Sweet. Sweet. Yeah. There's these little, you know, that's, I feel like a lot of our practice is creativity, you know, it's finding our own, cause nobody knows what's really going to work for us in a way. So whatever little clever things that we can do, compassionate things we can do for ourselves to turn the mind is great. And yeah, for me, like one of the things is if I'm just feeling very, very alienated from someone, right? It's resentment or it's distrust or something like that. I like to look for like, I don't know, something like personalized thing that they've chosen, like a t-shirt that they wear and what it says, or the tchotchke on their desk, or like the little thing hanging from their rear view mirror. I mean, some little sign of like their individuality, and it kind of softens my heart. Alice.
I think there's a space here for cognitive behavior therapy as well, where self-inquiry can really help. You know, if someone's really feeling depressed or self-pity, to inquire within themselves whether they're spinning a story or not. I mean, it's somewhat like kind of like, it's not exactly gaslighting you because yourself, because you do have these feelings, but then ask yourself, are you spinning a story on top of your feelings? And is that story like, is it really valid?
Mm-hmm.
Can kind of turn the whole story around.
Yeah. And cognitive behavioral therapy was inspired in part by Buddhist principles. So we have this in our practice, right? That so the first step is like, let's admit we have some choices to make here, and then trying to see clearly what's going on. Although what's interesting is with afflictive emotions, I think, is I don't know. There's something, other kinds of narratives and difficulties we may have, you know, have some roots, you know, resentment and what have you. But when these get really bad and powerful, it feels like they're just 99-cent bullshit, 99% bullshit. Like they are, and it's almost like the imagery in Buddhism was of Buddha on the enlightenment seat, and Mara sent him all kinds of doubts and attacks. So there's a way that if we can see this, these things sometimes as like, these are these separate forces that are just, they're trying to take us over. They're trying to possess us, right? And to recognize, no. Because I think, I mean, I think you're, I totally agree with you, Alice, but if we do that too soon, when we're still really in the throes of it, then our investigation just goes down the rabbit hole, right? We're still caught in this whole like reality that's been created. And I don't know. Natalie.
Okay, so I have several things. Today I was getting to experience getting really worked up and starting to feel emotionally, getting dysregulated. And I happen to have a massage scheduled, and it really switched it. I hadn't gotten body work for a while, and I really think that mind-body connection's big. I do think, you know, it's not just the inner brain, and then we do hold on to these emotions in our muscles too. So it was a huge, profound shift for me, just working the muscles and just like letting things go. So I think that's powerful. Getting out into nature, I think, is really, really huge because, I don't know. I think it helps. We have this manufactured world we live in. So I think reconnecting with the earth, with the trees, with the ocean can, I don't know, bring us back to our true reality more. And it helps shift the perspective, I think, a lot for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see yourself next to the vastness of the ocean, and sometimes those things can just start to just kind of melt away. What was the other? I know we had more. Pets, I think, is a big one. I think they can sometimes take us out of it. You know, cuddling up with my cat sometimes helps as well. Yep.
Thank you. Jimmy.
It's just a little thing, and then one other little thing. I just wanted to add on to what Alice had brought up about the story, and that is to look at the language I'm using. Because I am thinking of a friend in particular that I come into, I have a chance to see every few weeks, who is really in a bad way physically. And, you know, the doctors are out to get her. You know, it's just a bunch of kids trying to tell her what she has to do in order to feel better. And, you know, those nurses, they drive me nuts. I mean, it's just, and the insurance company hates her. Absolutely can't stand her. I mean, it's just this very negative, belligerent language about what her experience is. And I think that's an important thing to what I mean, that is such a perfect example to me of getting in my own way when I do that. By just making trouble for myself. So that's what I was gonna add. The other thing is, maybe you don't want to do this, but can we stop the screen share?
Yes. You can see everybody again.
What's your name again?
Oh. Go ahead.
Oh, sure.
Jade.
Natalie mentioned pets, and it reminded me of my dog in a chocolate lab, and he always knows when I've started like a little cycle. I'll be working, you know, and I'll be like, no, I gotta figure out this little puzzle, and I really gotta figure it out, you know, and he'll just come in like boot my hand, you know, or he'll coo, he'll be like, and you know, take a deep breath. I'm like, nah, but I gotta also solve this work thing, or I'll be ruminating about something happening in my life. I'm like, okay, all right, okay, let's go. And you know, we'll go outside, and I always feel better. It's always better to just step away from it and set it down. Like, no, it's not as important as I think it is. It'll still be here in 30 minutes. So yeah, I don't know. That helps for me.
Thank you. And I think what we can do in our practice, as we are availing ourselves of these different things that help, you know, it's like we maintain that thread of mindfulness through the whole thing. Mindfulness of what is going on in within and without. And if you can maintain that thread of mindfulness, because it can, you know, like Natalie was saying, okay, you got a massage and that's great. So in one sense, then you can just, you know, you can have that on your list. And if you're stressed, you know, you can book a massage. But you might not always be able to, right? You may not be able to go out in nature or avail yourself of those things. But just watching, you know, so there was this whole reality. And then you went in and laid on a table and somebody massaged you. And then the morality was different. Just starts to really drive home that all of this stuff is very ephemeral. It doesn't have inherent reality. You know, like my example of just one minute there's absolutely righteous anger. The next minute there's not. So none of this it's not as compelling, you know? So even the afflictive emotions then eventually are not as compelling because we've watched them come and go. And I can imagine, I have not taken medication for anxiety or depression or anything like that, but really that's a similar thing, you know? That is a lesson in no self. This was your experience. Then you took some medication. Now your experience is different and you feel like a somewhat different person. Who are you? Well, are you that depressed person, or is the real you uncovered by the, you know, medication? And from a Buddhist perspective, we say there is no real you. So don't worry about it. Whatever is most skillful, right, is most beneficial. That is what we turn toward. Well, we definitely didn't ground to betrayal.
But promised.
You promised we'd talk about betrayal tonight. But we have a few minutes left. Yeah, Judith.
I have a short story from the San Francisco Zen Center about maybe this that we're talking about. There was at Tassajara, the Zendo caught on fire and burned down, and people were actually meditating or sitting at the time. And a priest came in and said, fire, fire. And he had to say fire like 3 times. And he was very disturbed by the fact that people didn't immediately jump up and leave the area. And I only heard about it because I was helping rebuild, you know, the whole thing. But so my thought, having worked in emergency services for quite a while, is there are a lot of people out there who can't distinguish between what is an emergency and how you should respond. They question themselves. Should I do this? You see it if you pull up to an accident on the highway with a motorcycle or something like that. People are quite a few. There'll be a small percentage that will know what to do. The other people are sort of milling around looking at the motorcycle, usually, and not the injured person. So I'm leery of, I think that cyclical process we go through in our heads is important to be safe. But then if it's overdone, it's like a fine line. It needs to be turned off. Okay, so maybe you can reassure.
Well, yeah. And actually, because we just have a few minutes left, I think I'll go more into that in betrayal as well, because that's an example, right, of we may have a emotional reaction to like somebody's violated our trust, but now we have to practice and deal with that without just like pretending it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Or like denying how we feel. Like chances are it's good, we're going to have to set a new boundary and change things as we process or accept or whatever, come to terms, right? So it's like you got to be real as well. it's very, it is very tricky. That's why, I wanted to make that disclaimer at the beginning of this kind of, it's not that all anger or all doubt or any of these things when they first arise are bad and, untrue inherently or anything like that, but just, what is the effect? If, as somebody said, now we can't sleep, now we're not eating properly, now we're just miserable all the time, our zazen is just full of this, we know that's not helpful. So in some ways that, we can definitely go, too far with spiritual practice and do what, the spiritual bypassing, where we use the tools of practice to just tamp down or avoid feelings, which is definitely, something that we all probably do to some extent sometimes, people can do. But that's not the idea, right? So we want a certain access and freshness. So if we're always editing and we shouldn't ever feel this thing, then we probably are walking around kind of befuddled, like you're talking about. We don't have access to that immediate emotional response. I mean, for me, I grew up, constitutionally, but also in a culture, and maybe also because I'm a woman, like anger's bad, especially you definitely like expressing anger, publicly with other people, to other people, just, oh no. So there's always this suppression of it, which then it's not there when you need it. When somebody's being an asshole, you're not able to just go like, hey, back off, Instead, you're totally going like, I should be telling him to back off, but I can't. Ah. So, very interesting point. All right. Well, offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Damiel.